Ready.
Just in the middle of the field, 45, 50. Green grass in front of him, leaving Lions in his wake.
I am Jeff Joniak.
Blitz is on. Down he goes. Husker.
What was it like playing for Coach Ditka?
I don't want to answer any questions like that.
61 yards. A Sunday stroll for Justin Fields.
No way.
Now, Bears Etc. brought to you by Miller Lite with the voices of the Bears, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer.
Preseason comes to a close Saturday afternoon. The Bears hosting the Buffalo Bills. We'll break it down and check in with Bears running back coach David Walker. Plus, the Athletic's Dan Pompey joins us after his presentation, pushes the number 19-ranked Bears player of all time to the goal line to election in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. This is Bears Etc. with Super Bowl-winning Bear Tom Thayer. I'm Jeff Joniak. We're brought to you by Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time, Chicago. Good to be with you here on episode number 10 as we break down things. But before we do all that, we welcome in immediately Mr. Pompey, the Hall of Famer himself. Dan, what a process involving Steve McMichael and the Veterans Committee. Again, this is a recommendation, one of three recommendations to the group of 50 that will have the ultimate vote in February. But the history says this is a very, very good thing and a huge hurdle crossed. What's your perspective on it all?
Well, obviously thrilled for Steve because he couldn't be more deserving. And, you know, the strange thing is, Jeff and Tom, this was the first time Steve McMichael ever was discussed by a Hall of Fame committee. He never got this far before. He's been eligible for 25 years. So clearly, you know, his oversight was a problem. And it was great to see that the senior committee recognized it and understood exactly the kind of impact he had on the Bears of the 1980s and all the things he contributed. And he is so deserving, and it's a wonderful, heartwarming story.
You know, Dan, Steve never has to be sold to me because I had the luxury of practicing against him every day. But do you ever think that Steve might have got overlooked because of his bigger-than-life personality outside of football? And sometimes, frankly, that might rub some people the wrong way.
You know, I really kind of thought the oversight was mostly about the fact that he came in after being cut by the New England Patriots and was on a team – on a line even, you know, with Dan Hampton, who is, you know, going to get all of the attention, deservedly so, fantastic player. Then also on a team with Richard Dent and Mike Singletary and all the other great stars, even, you know, if go on the other side of the ball, you've got a couple Hall of Famers and you've got the coach. And, you know, everyone really got a lot of attention. There was a point when even, you know, Fritz Perry got more attention than Steve McMichael. He just kind of got lost, and I don't know why. I mean, he was a guy who was consistently productive, probably the most consistently productive of any player on that defense over a 10-year period. You know, Mike Giddings, who runs a scouting service that many NFL teams use, it's called Pro Scout. It's been it's been around for years and years. I asked him about McMichael, and, you know, he rates every player in the league every year. The highest rating you could give a player is a blue rating. Steve McMichael was a blue rating nine times in his career, 9 years. He said, if you're a blue rating for 5 years, that's a Hall of Fame player.
But you know what's weird about Ming is, you know, there used to be a compliment from a lot of the old school head coaches that said, man, this guy is a lunch bucket type of guy. He comes to work every day with that type of attitude. And that was Steve. But I don't know if that was exactly a guy that just showed up to work every day, or it was as complimentary as Steve deserved in the eyes of some of the voters. And, you know, and maybe some of the peers, some of the guys he played against, because, you know, he was a guy that would jaw on the field and he would let you know it. You know, sometimes, you know, that was the way people decided his fate.
Well, and you know, as well as anyone, Tom, Steve did a lot of the dirty work for other people. He would hold the jump through and he would absorb the double teams. And, you know, there were a lot of times that Richard Dent was getting a sack and Mike Singletary was making a tackle for a loss, and it couldn't have happened without Steve. You know, I called eight guys who played against him, opponents, on a regular basis, from Ron Hallstrom to Kirk Loudermilk to Randall McDaniel, Kevin Glover, all these guys. I asked them each, every one of them said, oh, no question, he's a Hall of Famer. That guy, you know, they told me things, you know, he gave me more, Brian Baldinger said he gave me more problems than Howie Long. You know, they were, for, to a man, every one of them was completely impressed. And I think when, you know, it's one thing for a teammate to say that. It's another thing for an opponent to say that. And these guys had the ultimate respect for Steve McMichael.
Well, the word that comes to mind is his relentlessness. Still played the game in a way with the right technique and the intelligence. That's one thing Tom has told me all the time. You don't understand how smart of a player this guy was. But then you look at the math, and we often look at the math, and the 95 sacks, fourth all-time for a defensive tackle in NFL history. You can't sweep that under the rug. And I do believe, Dan, like I went back, so the fearsome foursome, that group has more than one defensive line in the Hall of Fame. The Pittsburgh Steelers have Mean Joe Green, but they have others. And this defensive line now with three, potentially, with Steve's, I'm going to go probable induction at this point with a group of 50 in the Hall of Fame. In the end, a team sport does get individualized when you talk about the Hall of Fame. And so you have to look at the impact of one and how it impacts the others. How did you sell that argument? And then how did you frame it with McMichael, given that it's never been really discussed before?
Well, you know, I think if you look, a lot of the great teams in history have multiple Hall of Famers. Now, whether or not they're on the defensive line or from one unit is another matter. But you look at the Kansas City Chiefs from the late 60s, you know, I don't know that they were considered a great dynasty or anything. I believe they've got eight representatives in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Packers from the 60s, the Cowboys in the 60s and 70s, the Steelers you mentioned of the 70s. You know, all these teams, they've got multiple Hall of Famers. We're probably going to see a bunch from the Patriots dynasty as time goes on. We've seen, I think, what do we got? Two already from the Patriots dynasty, maybe three. You know, the Bears certainly, every one of the Bears who were in the Hall of Fame is deserving without a doubt from that era. And there's another one who Tom is well familiar with, who's deserving as well, who we haven't been able to get any traction with. But maybe someday Jay Hilgenberg will join them all.
You know, Dan, when you look at Steve McMichael and you think about 1984, they were a great defense. 1986, they were a better defense than they were in 85 statistically. 85, they win the Super Bowl. If they have a Super Bowl in 84 to 86, is Steve McMichael more of an immediate enter into the Hall of Fame? And because we only had the one Super Bowl, although they were a super successful defense, did that slow the process?
Possibly. I mean, you know, I guess it's a hypothetical that we really could never know the answer to, but certainly the Bears probably would be more highly regarded. You know, I think now there's a lot of people that look at the Giants of that era and the 49ers of that era, and they say, well, they were a better team, you know, because they've got multiple championships. The Redskins, too, you know, I mean, it was a era for great teams. Right. And the championships matter without a doubt. But I think you have to look at the individuals involved and what they did and their own resumes. And if you look at Steve McMichael's resume, it really shouldn't take a backseat to anybody. You mentioned the sacks, you know, fourth of all time among defensive tackles.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, that's going back to 82. If you went back to 1960 before sacks were taken, people have gone back and figured that out. He's still eighth. So, you know, that's special. And he wasn't a guy who played the run, you know, as a secondary thing. I mean, he was a great run defender. He led that team, that defensive line in tackles seven times. So, you know, probably the most consistent run defender up front, too.
Can I give you one more hypothetical? If the Bears don't draft William Perry, but they go to a different position, and then the phenomenon that William Perry became in such a short period of time, did that take away a little of the mustard away from Steve because he was in the rotation of that defensive tackle position?
Well, it's a great question. You know, the other aspect of that is if they don't draft William Perry, Hamp probably stays inside and doesn't kick outside, right?
Right, right.
So, well, and if you look, when Hampton and McMichael were together, those were some of their most productive seasons when they were both inside. So, you know, McMichael might have even had more sacks or been more productive if they had not drafted Perry and you kept him inside with Hampton the whole time.
One of the greatest things walking out of the locker room with Steve McMichael going, all right, Singletary, me and Hampton are going to go out there and do the dirty work to make you an all pro again. And it was just a funny, you know, bit of his, comedy. And, you know, really, you talked about the dirty work that those guys did inside. They did plenty of it.
And he goes down as one of the big personalities in NFL history, the unique ones that we hear about all the time, right? I mean, here in Chicago, we got spoiled with his antics and his fun and his stories. But nationally, they got a glimpse of it, I guess, when he got into wrestling and so forth. Dan Pompeo, the Athletic, a couple of more minutes with Dan. He's kind enough to join us here on Bears Etc. And we are sponsored by multiple companies, including Jewel Osco. Score huge savings on an impressive lineup of items with Jewel Osco for you. This handy app features hot digital deals on everything from premium produce and savory snacks to butcher fresh meat and more. Get additional details at jewelosco.com. Take us in the room. How do you present this other than the facts, and do you get a ton of questions regarding his candidacy? How does this work with the Veterans Committee versus just the normal process?
The discussion on him wasn't terribly long. I gave a presentation. We're supposed to give a presentation that's no longer than about 5 minutes. And I gave that. I recited what a number of the opponents had told me and talked about some statistics. I compared them to Ken Riley, of all people, who was just inducted into the Hall of Fame. And the comparison was this. Ken Riley had played in zero Pro Bowls in his career, in part because he played across from Lamar Parrish, who played in 9 Pro Bowls. Hmm. Steve McMichael only played in 2 Pro Bowls in his career, in part because he was on this line with Hampton and Richard Dent. And the other factor with McMichael is, back in those days, they were only taking 2 defensive tackles per conference because many teams played a 3-man front. Bears, of course, played a 4-man front. So they were penalized at the defensive tackle position if you had a 4-man front. So we talked about that. There was a little discussion. And then, I closed out my argument by bringing up the elephant in the room at the end of it all, which was he has ALS. And, you know, I said I didn't expect anybody to vote for him because he was ill. But I said, if you think he's a Hall of Famer, and I don't see how you can't, if you look at his credentials, it would be nice to see him inducted when he could enjoy it.
Well, hopefully that'll be the case. And then what's next down the line then? Do you have to present again, or it's just now presented, it's now been forwarded on, and they negotiate that?
Yeah, the 50-person board of selectors will meet in January, and the 3 senior candidates who are being recommended will be discussed, presented again, and then they will vote yes or no on each person. And then we'll also have discussions and voting on a modern era. And then the announcement will be at the NFL honors the week before the Super Bowl.
You know, the thing about McMichael, though, no room was too big for him. I remember going to a couple of his wrestling matches in the WCW. And you talk about a guy that came aboard in a short period of time, but when he was in the room, he carried the room. With all these dynamic personalities in professional wrestling, they all gravitated towards Ming. And the first time I walked in there and got to see the wrestler Steve McMichael that was different than the football player, it was amazing how big his personality transferred from room to room.
Tom, I believe you wrestled once, didn't you? Weren't you in one of those wrestling
matches? No, Jim. It was Jimbo Fridge and Ming.
All right. Well, here's what I want to know. One question: who had the better bench press? You?
I did.
But you couldn't have been by much, right?
Over Ming.
Yeah.
I was a little bit more than Steve, but he had a unique style. But I tell you, Yes, but Steve, the first time in my life I ever benched 500 pounds, it was because of Steve, and I don't know if I have the luxury to use every word and his encouragement, but we are in Atlanta before the Super Bowl, and they used to have these cowboy doors on their weight room, and I had 495 pounds loaded on the bar with Clyde Emmerich. And these cowboy doors swung open, and Ming came through bigger than life. And he gave me these words of inspiration, that concluded by put the 2.5s on each side and it loaded up to 500 pounds. And that was the first time in my life I benched 500, went on to bench more after that. But I still say Steve is my biggest inspiration in the weight room I've ever come across.
That sounds like a North Dallas 40 clip with the cowboy doors. I mean, honestly, and you know, Dan, what's crazy to think how players lose a little bit of their strength over the course of a season, and here before the Super Bowl, this one benches 500. Boy, amazing. Oh boy, that's impressive, Tom.
Every lift I've ever done at my maximum, it was by either inspired by Ming or Clyde Emmerich was by my side. And the most I ever benched was 535, and that was through like the encouragement of both Ming and Clyde.
Ming wasn't far. Was he 525? Was his best?
Yeah, ever? Ming was right behind me. That's what the thing about it was. We used to go toe to toe, and we had the days that we would have specifically designed for the heavy type of lifting. But I could never bench heavyweight like Steve McMichael did, and he couldn't do it the way I did it. So we are two different styles of lifters. But listen, Ming's strength transfer to the football field is good as any football player in the sport. And he was the strongest guy that I played against, and he was the strongest guy I practiced against.
Great testimonies indeed about one of the legends in Bears history, a top 20 player from Dan Pompey's research along with Don Pearson and the Bears scrapbook, their 100-year scrapbook, number 19, certainly deserving of a Hall of Fame. Yep. Hall of Fame induction, for sure. An election hopefully coming in January and February. One last thing, Dan, we'll let you go. Appreciate all this time, honestly. So the Devin Hester and the Jay Hilgenbergs, what's the next step in both?
Well, you know, Jay is a senior. He'd be in the senior pool as Steve McMichael was, and he would have to clear the hurdles that Steve did in subsequent years in order to get in the room. Jay's another guy we've never talked about, you know, which is crazy. That would have to happen somehow, which is tough to do. Devin will, I'm sure, be a finalist again this year, and we'll discuss him again, and hopefully we'll make some more traction than we did the past 2 years.
Olin Krutz, has he been discussed?
He has not been discussed. Another worthy candidate.
So in these situations, pardon my naivety, if you are considered the Chicago guy for this, do you bring it up and then hope others will grab on, or how does this work?
Yeah, so the first elimination votes, you know, you start out with like there might be 150 players, and everyone just votes, you know, to reduce it. And there are a couple, two or three reduction votes before anybody meets. And oftentimes, you know, a guy like Steve McMichael, for instance, when he was a modern era candidate, never got to the point where he made it where he would be discussed in the room. So that's the first hurdle. It's just getting where you're discussed in the room. You know, Olin has not been discussed in the room, hasn't gotten that far yet. Thankfully, Devin has, obviously. But that's the first hurdle. And then when you're in the room, you know, you got to clear that. You're in there with 20 other candidates or whatever it is. So it's a tough thing to get in the Hall of Fame, as it should be. You know, there have been something like close to 30,000 players who played in the NFL, and I think there's about 300 of them in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So it's tough. It's tough. Mm.
Great stuff, Dan. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Dan Pompey, Hall of Fame writer from The Athletic here on Bears Etc. United Airlines, the official airlines of the Chicago Bears. All right, couple of things, Tom. Braxton Jones spoke today up at Hallis Hall, just about where he's at right now compared to last season, and I was impressed with what he had to say all over the course of last season, the offseason, and once again here today. And he is an often overlooked person. We are talking about every other offensive lineman. We've been talking about all the additions, who's not here, the injuries that have piled up. Are we taking him for granted in terms he has not missed a practice snap, he has not missed a game snap, and he is constantly, as we listen to him, preparing, staying up late at night last season with Doug Kramer to go over the playbook. He's still working on everything he needs to work on. He's still a young player, but are we overlooking this player because he's always showing up?
Not at all. it's a good thing when you're not talked about, because usually when you're talked about, there's question marks behind some of the conversation. You're trying to think of does this player have it or not? When you have a player as talented as Braxton Jones has showed early in his career, it's something that Chris Morgan, the offensive line coach, wants more than anything. You want to have a player that you're not having conversations with on the outside to media members or even other people that come in from other venues around the league. You want to have a guy that shows up every single day exactly what you said. So to me, the less we talk about Braxton Jones, the better he is as a player.
Well, he says there's a big difference in his comfort level, and you'd expect that. Last year he felt he struggled getting off of the ball, thinking about the play too much. Again, we get to that think you're beat type of scenario, but now much better flow, much better comfort, and just about technique. And if the technique slips, you got to get back to the basics and get back to the proper technique. He's mindful of the fact that who's playing there at left guard, getting used to Tevin, now back to getting used to Cody Whitehair. To him, it's irrelevant. You got to get ready to whomever you're going to play next to, and it sounds like starters are going to play. How much, we don't know. Matt Eberflus saying, yes, starters will play. They're going to keep an eye on it because of the changes on offensive line and the unavailability of some due to injury. But I'm sure you're happy to hear that these guys are going to play.
Yeah, you know, Cody and Braxton, they will not skip a beat. It does not need a long ramp-up period for Cody Whitehair to go from center to guard. And then when you think about the big talented body of Cody Whitehair next to the big talented body like Braxton Jones, that is really settling to the offensive line coach, understanding there's communication and experience already in place, and it's not something that you have to spend a lot of time with minutia in meetings, getting these two guys prepared to play together.
Game day snacking calls for good foods. Chunky guacamole made with Haas avocados, tomatoes, onions, cilantro, and a squeeze of lime juice. It's the perfect snack to watch while the Bears win. Score some today at your local grocery store. Game day is guac day. Jeff and Tom here on Bears Etc. All right, let's talk about the running game. There has been a big change. David Montgomery, of course, in Detroit. New bodies added. You've got Khalil Herbert in the number one role right now. You got Dante Foreman. You've got the rookie Roschon Johnson. You've got Travis Homer. You've got a banged up right now Trusted Ebner, and you got two fullbacks. Overall, are you expecting the same kind of rugged, tough, yard after contact type running game that we experienced in 2022, regardless if Justin Fields runs for 1,100 yards or 500 yards?
Listen, the threat of Justin Fields gives this running game a lot of expandability, Jeff, because it's not something that it's only an inside the tackle point of attack running game. And I think this is the offensive line is built for that. And I think they're going to have an inside game running presence. But if you can become deceptive by way the quarterback moves after he gets the ball in his hands, whether it's a shotgun snap or directly under center, you got to think about the awareness of the outside personnel on the defense, and that could open up holes on the inside and the outside. So to me, I think the Bears running game has the same explosiveness within it that it did last year. And I've always been, if Justin throws the ball more efficiently, the more it's going to open up running game opportunities. But the athleticism in the running game is really going to give the opportunity for every one of these guys to show their explosiveness, to show their talents. And I was thinking about that when you were talking to the running backs coach about the running backs they have here. They all have similarities, but there's differences between them. And they have speed, they have explosiveness. You constantly talk about Roschon talking about using his body as a weapon. And they all have that ability. So what we're going to see out of the running game, I expect the same as last year.
Well, let's listen in to running back coach David Walker on that very topic, including beginning on the long journey of a career that has not started the way he wanted it for Dante Foreman, who's experienced a lot of hurdles to get to where he is with the Bears, and how Johnson's adapting.
We feel that all the guys that we're going to line up can do all the job descriptions we ask of them. He hasn't shown us any limitations, and we're not going to approach it that way with him or any of the other guys.
As coaches, you guys really take the time to get to know the person. Forget about the football. So yep. What do you think, what you just explained about what he's gone through, what's he explained to you how that's impacted him?
In his words, his path hasn't been the easiest. And I think having to deal with ups and downs in your career helps harden you, helps make you tougher mentally on things, and help you accept. I don't know what the right word I'm looking for. He can deal with any situation, good or bad, because he's demonstrated already in his career, overcoming injury, overcoming maybe being overlooked, overcoming role changes based on personnel there, not there. He's like done all that in his career, and he's handled it all well. His psyche, let's call it, or his approach, he's a hard guy to rattle. Let me say it that way.
Is that a good guy for the rest of the guys then to bounce stuff off when they're having a bad day? Roshan and Khalil?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's, I mean, you don't survive in this league 5-6 years as a running back without, number one, having good ability, without being productive, and without having like some fortitude about who you are and how you are. Like, it just doesn't happen.
Roshan made me stop and like, whoa, when he said the other day, I use my body as a weapon.
Yeah, he plays.
You know, you don't hear that often from players.
We try to play a physical style of football on our offense, whether it's offensive linemen or backs or our receivers. So he plays in the style that we want here in Chicago. We would like to be violent with the ball in our hands as we attack people, and I think we've shown that ability. We guys probably all remember Deontay's catching the flat the other day, and he stiff-armed. Like that's we want that to be like standard in how we operate.
Tom, I love Walker's enthusiasm for the run game. He's outstanding teacher. I love how he works with these guys and what he expects. By the way, they did average 2 yards after contact per carry last season. That was fourth best in the NFL. Now, certainly that does include some big numbers after contact from Justin Fields. On the rare occasion, somebody got a hand on him. But he did get a lot of yards after getting to the second level, that's for sure. But that unit was rugged. I expect the same and maybe more of a power running game this year.
Oh, so do I. When you brought up that stat of 2 yards after contact, I was surprised by that because I thought it was more. And I think this is the types of the running backs, whether it's the lower body strength of Khalil Herbert, the pad level of Roshan Johnson, or Deontay Foreman, his elusiveness inside the hole. I do think that this can be a running game that is, has more explosiveness. And if Justin takes that next step and is able to widen the requirements to make sure you guard every yard of the width of the field, that's when the holes are going to increase in size. If you increase the size of the holes by a half a yard or a yard, then you're talking about more yards after contact.
Bears Etc. brought to you by PNC, official bank of the Bears. All right, let's pick up the conversation on Justin, because I asked Andrew Janoco, the quarterback coach, all the assistants who are available this week for the first time in training camp, so you got a chance to get snippets of information. And this whole idea of zone versus man coverage, what Justin may be seeing this year, will teams be interested in less man coverage with their back turned to Justin because of what he did when they did turn their back when he ejected the pocket and ran for big yards? Here's his answer.
I don't know that. I think defenses do what they do. I think they have a plan each week, but defensive coordinators, like offensive coordinators, have a DNA. So I don't know that you can say that they're going to do this versus that. I think that they're going to look at us and say, what can we do within our system that gives us the most chance to be successful? So I don't know that you could say that, because I think defensive coordinators have their system. They like to do what they do, and then they adapt as they see fit each week.
Okay, he makes a great point, Tom. Yes, it is going to be whatever scheme choices are out there. Defenses are going to do what they're going to do. But that being said, defenses also adapt in some cities based on what the offense that they're about to face. I think New England, Belichick's always coming up with a unique game plan for the opposition. I'm expecting more unique game planning for Justin Fields, but do you get what he's trying to say there?
Yeah, well, take the example of last year when the Bears played in the New England Patriots in New England. What happened? You know, they had one of their most explosive offensive performances of all time. I think it's just different. If you play man-to-man, you're going to expose yourself to give Justin the more opportunities to run. If you play zone coverage and you have a good relationship with the elusiveness of DJ Moore, the size of Chase Claypool, the ability of Cole Kmet, and the rest of the cast and characters of receivers at the line of scrimmage or out of the backfield, you're going to create more landmark opportunities for Justin. And if he gets into that rhythm, now defenses are going to be confused by what is best to play. So DJ Moore is going to bring a lot to this offense. What I've seen out of Chase Claypool throughout his time in training camp, and what the other guys that can bring to this offense, it's going to be interesting to see early in the season what type of coverage that they want to play against the Bears. And you know, maybe last year's example of the Green Bay Packers and how they played the Bears the second time around will create opportunities and openings for Justin this time around.
And I know a lot of folks are interested, hey, who's going to be available week one? And I know, Tom, you've turned the page and it's all about Packer prep now. But when asked directly about these three guys, Matt Eberflus says he's, quote, confident Chase Claypool, Eddie Jackson, Jaquan Brisker will be ready for week one.
So do I. You know, and I think that's a determination that's made by many people nowadays in the NFL. This isn't just by the encouragement of the head coach to get out there and do what you can do. They have a lot of evaluation they go through to make sure they put the player in the healthiest of positions to go out there and contribute as much as they can. So I think the circumstances week one is going to be great playing conditions. They have to be concerned and make sure they have a solid rotation of players week two and three, because the heat can be a major part of it. But every one of those guys you mentioned, they have a major role in the overall success of this football team. And I believe they'll be there, and I hope they be there. I hope they'll be there, and I believe they will be there.
All right, Buffalo is going to play their starters as well, including Josh Allen. Again, how much, you know, it should make for a more interesting broadcast right out of the gate. Of course, our pregame getting underway at 8 a.m. on ESPN 1000 and the Bears Radio Network at 10 a.m. with kickoff at noon with our sideline reporter, Jason McKee. So I'm excited about seeing a team like Buffalo, contender, an AFC potential playoff team annually now with that great quarterback.
Yeah, me too. I think it's a great barometer of exactly where the Bears are. When you judge, you know, starters against starters, and listening to Matt Eberflus at the podium, someone asked him about, you like seeing your guys against the starters. Of course you do, because you want to see your starters judged against their best and vice versa. And that gives you a better indicator of exactly where you are. Perfect playing conditions, natural grass field, outdoor Saturday at noon. Temperature is going to be perfect. I don't think that you can get a better atmosphere, especially when you think of the start of the season as 2 weeks away from the last preseason game. You got to give these guys some reality football, because everything isn't just roses when that 17-game stretch starts.
All right, Tom, that's going to wrap us up. We're brought to you by United Airlines, official airlines of the Chicago Bears.
And of let's course, go longer.
Really,
you got a lot more to talk about.
You're going to have to save some of it for the radio. We're brought to you by Miller Lite, the official beer of the Chicago Bears. Tastes like Miller time, Chicago.
Pop yourself open
a Miller and then, you know, save it for the radio, big time.
Well, I just wanted to tell all the high school coaching staffs good luck, because the high school football starts this weekend. There's big games up and down the dial. Our own Jason McKee, head coach at Carmel High School, has his first game going, and having a chance to really get to know him a lot better and talk to him. The anticipation of the game as a head coach is really meaningful for him. And so all the staffs, the parents, the support of all these kids and coaches, best of luck to them, and have a great season.
I appreciate it. What's Joliet Catholic's projection this year?
Undefeated.
Hey, my Hersey Huskies, I'm told, have three Division I players on after an unbeaten season last year before a surprise loss in the playoffs. So maybe they'll go head-to-head, Tom.
No. Yeah. You know, my brother is part of the freshman football staff. My nephew Brett is part of the varsity staff. So I think every staff across high school, the landscape of high school football, I'm really pulling for every one of them.
Always exciting. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe now on the Chicago Bears official app, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. That wraps us up. We'll talk to you on the radio Saturday, noon kickoff against the Bills. For Tom Thayer, I'm Jeff Joniak. Thanks to Dan Pompey. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.